You're listening to HuntertonChamberRadio.com, sponsored by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. Our studios are located in the CenturyLink building at 14 Mine Street, Flemington, New Jersey. The content and views of our hosts do not necessarily reflect the views of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. To contact our station, call 908-782-7115 or email onair@hunterdon-chamber.org. Thank you to our sponsors and underwriters. Please remember to support them and buy Hunterdon, buy local. Visit www.hunterdonchamberradio.com for a complete listing of our programming.
Good afternoon. It's a few minutes after 4, and our news is not cooperating, so we'll talk to me. I'm Pat Smits, your host of It's the Law, and today we're going to be talking about some general legal news. However, one of the things that you would be hearing, of course, if we had the news on, is the monumentous, incredible something has happened that hasn't happened in 54 years, and it's the flag of the United States is being raised in Cuba, and our vice president was there and made an excellent speech. And I know that there's some controversy with respect to Cuba, and there are many Cuban Americans who will never support any recognition of Cuba. But I think for many people, we recognize that we've established relations with Vietnam, despite the fact that, 80-some thousand of our young men and women died in that conflict and that war. And so that for many of us, I think we think it's time. There's certainly, I'm not going to get into the controversy, but at least it's monumental. It's the first time in 54 years that that has happened. And for many of us, we look forward to visiting Cuba. And certainly anybody who's a car buff would, probably can't wait to see what they've done, because they have the cars from 54 years ago and they're still running. And it doesn't mean that they have all the original parts, because from my understanding, the Cubans are very, educated people, industrious people, and they've actually machined new parts for the old cars. So it'll be an interesting, certainly interesting, and especially for those of us who, lived through or remember as children what was going on at that time. But in any event, since we don't have the news, that's the news. And the news, what's going to happen? Let's give you a sponsor, at least a sponsor of the news.
This is Tony Clark, paraplanner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Pat and Heidi and Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Well, let's talk about the weather. Beautiful day today. I hope you've been able to go out. And we're looking forward to a great weekend. Mostly sunny tomorrow. Tonight we'll only get down to about 63 degrees, mostly clear tonight. Tomorrow mostly sunny and partly cloudy tomorrow night, but who cares? And mostly sunny again on Sunday up to about 92 degrees. And then again, mostly sunny on Monday. But it looks like it's going to be a beautiful weekend, one of the best. So be sure to get out there because towards the end of the week, there may be, end of next week, there may be some clouds or maybe some rain. It's too hard to predict in the future. So I'm not going to, just enjoy the weekend. On Monday, as I said, mostly sunny. So if you can take this as a three-day weekend, it would be a good way because we're, as we know, we're getting down to, we're now in the middle of August, and kids are starting football practice, and people will be going back to school, colleges. Some of them are on their way back, and soon we'll be in September. So I'm going to give you just a couple commercials, and then I'm going to talk today about some of the legal news, and that's it. So we'll be back in just a minute, but let me have you hear from some of our sponsors. And again, this is Local Hunterdon News and Local Hunterdon Sponsors, and we really encourage you to seek out our sponsors and seek out anyone locally. I just recently had my car had some work on, and I took it to someone in Frenchtown, and he was terrific. I mean, he was just absolutely terrific. And there's so many of our local businesses that do such great jobs. So again, let's shop Hunterdon. We live here, and let's keep it as rural as we can, and that's to keep some of the small businesses. Not that we don't need the big box stores, but it's certainly nice to have the businesses that we know and talk to the people, and you know they're going to give us good service.
Let Stowaway Self-Storage be your local moving and storage solution. With three great locations in Hunterdon County, Stowaway is conveniently located in Flemington, White House, and Lebanon. Stowaway Self-Storage offers sizes from 5x5 to 50x50, discounted packing supplies, and U-Haul rentals on site. Affordable monthly rentals for your personal and business use. Let Stowaway help you park your car in the garage again or store those old records that you need to keep. Visit us at stowawayselfstorage.com and mention this ad to receive 50% off your first month's rent. Hey, this is Big C of Good Morning Hunterdon on HuntingChamberRadio.com. Like what you hear on Hunterdon Chamber Radio? Now you can take it with you. Download our Hunterdon Chamber Radio app from iTunes and Google Play Store now. Get schedules, station information, listen live, or to the latest podcasts. Everything in the palm of your hand or in your car during your commute. Get the HuntingChamberRadio.com app today.
Well, it's the program, as I said, It's the Law. I'm your host, Pat Smits, and I'm going to talk today about some of the legal news and some of the cases. And I do not have a guest today, and everybody seems to want to enjoy the summer, and I understand that. In fact, next week I don't think I'll be here, and we'll be replaying the broadcast on some of the issues with respect to the Equality of Marriage Act. And I had great guests on, Deb Gustin and Bill Singer, and I hope if you didn't have a chance to listen to that program or download it, that you'll think of listening to it next week. So we have good news as far as both the attorneys and litigants. because the New Jersey Senate approved 11 new judges yesterday. And the nominations were 10 lawyers to the Superior Court bench and one to Workers' Compensation Court. I'm old enough to want to say Workmen's Compensation Court. But the Workers' Compensation is a specialized court. It is these cases are not heard in the Superior Court. So these judges who are now appointed will go and to various counties around the state. That doesn't mean we don't need to pressure, and I mean pressure, to get more judges, because we're still, judges are understaffed, our courts are understaffed, we need more judges, certainly here in Hunterdon County. We have Judge Burry in the family part, for example. He's doing an excellent job, but he is going to even have more work in September. And the judges really can't handle, the workload, not fairly handle it, meaning that they do fairly handle things, but it's just not fair to them to have to spend nights, weekends, vacations trying to catch up with everything that they have to do. And a family court, for example, there's so many different things that the family court judges have to handle. It's not just divorce work, and people often think it is. And it's very interesting because once someone is a litigant, they start to realize just how difficult it is to and how long it takes very often to get cases through the court. And that's not right. It's not right. It's not fair to the judges. Their staffs are overworked. It's not fair to the lawyers, and it's certainly not fair to the litigants. And in fact, I have just learned that some of the family court motions are going to now be heard in Warren County. Well, that's unfair to the litigants. It means that they have to pay their attorneys to travel from Hunterdon County to Warren County. It means that two different judges are going to be handling cases, because one will be handling motions and the other judge here, Judge Burry, will be handling everything else. It just does not work well. And so this is, they have to do something. They cannot have one judge handling all of the motions in the divorce cases and all of the other things that the judge has to handle. So, but that's not a good solution, unfortunately. So what else is happening? There's been a school district, you may have heard this, that was sued by a former student for bullying, and the school district was granted permission to pursue third-party claims against some of the alleged bullies. And the idea of the school district pursuing legal claims against students who misbehave is certainly getting mixed reviews from lawyers, and we really have to think about this, because not that we need more litigation, but in fact, as taxpayers, then we are going to be certainly paying more legal fees, because the school districts are going to have attorneys who are pursuing these cases. And of course, the schools don't want to be sued, and I understand that, but whose responsibility is it, especially when we're involving, in these cases, almost always it's involving juveniles. So I think that, interesting, but, and we should talk to lawyers as to why many of them think it's a good idea and many of them think it's not a good idea. But all I can say is it looks to me like it's going to increase all of our taxpayers, not be helpful to us, because we'll be paying the fees that the school districts have to pay to hire the attorneys. And probably many of these students, or former students, since they were juveniles, they're probably judgment-proof. But that's just my quick take on it. Now, the National Labor Relations Board issued modified procedures for unions and employers to follow when representation petitions are filed. Now, these are aptly called quickie election rules, and it decreases the time frame during which union organization elections occur, so that if anybody's interested in that, I'm not sure there are. But certainly, Hoffman LaRoche should be really happy because of statute of limitations grounds, an appeals court has reversed a $25 million verdict against Hoffman LaRoche and Roche Laboratories in a case of a man who alleged he developed Crohn's disease after using the company's drug Accutane. So it was reversed based on the fact that he had not filed suit within the statute of limitations. And that's what that term means. It means that there is a time period in which someone can, in fact, file a lawsuit. And most of the time, it's, you know, it depends on the type of suit. But there's another case that was approved for publication, a torts case, and it was against Toll Brothers. And this was a Supreme Court of New Jersey case. And the decision was written by Justice Albin. And the issue is the immunity of a property, in this case, owner. So this was an immunity of a property owner from claims for injuries on a public sidewalk. And this was previously addressed in a case, but Justice Albin and the Supreme Court said it did not apply to bar a claim for personal injuries against the Homeowners Association and management company of the common interest community, because the sidewalk on which the plaintiff fell on ice constitutes a private sidewalk as it is part of the common area owned by the Homeowners Association, and the association's bylaws and statutory obligations require the association to manage and maintain the community's common areas. So that this claim is going to be able to proceed. And that is fairly significant, and homeowners associations are going to have to be very careful in the future because these claims could be significant, of course. And so that is a tort claim, and it was against Toll Brothers, Inc. I'm not sure which condominium complex. There's also the case, another Supreme Court case, and environmental and insurance, where it was a fragrance corporation against Aetna Casualty, and the Givaldin Corporation contaminated the groundwater and soil with hazardous materials in the vicinity of its plant in Clifton over many decades. So apparently between 1964 and 1986, defendant insurance company Aetna, in between those years, the insurance companies issued occurrence-based policies to the company. And they later merged into another company in the 1990s. So the successor company, by merger, acquired the rights under those policies. And various environmental actions were brought against plaintiff, an affiliate of the successor by merger. And these were claims for environmental damage that the corporation caused between 1964 and 1986. So that what happened then is the successor by merger assigned its rights under the insurance policies to the plaintiff, which sought coverage under the policies. And Aetna Casualty and Surety denied coverage, raising a number of defenses. And primarily the insurance company argued that the policies could not be assigned because of a no assignment provision in the respective policies. So what happened at trial, the trial court found in favor of the defendants and dismissed plaintiff's declaratory judgment action. Now the, I'm sorry, this wasn't a Supreme Court, I misspoke. It's the appellate division. So the appellate division reversed, noting that under settled principles, an insured may assign its rights under a policy after a loss because an insurer's risk remains the same, regardless of the insured's identity. So in other words, if in fact there is a loss, then that means that you can in fact transfer to a new buyer, and they would take over the same rights. And the appellate division said, further, once an insurer's liability has become fixed due to a loss, an assignment of rights to collect under an insurance policy is not a transfer of the actual policy, but rather a transfer of the right to claim money. So that's the distinction. They said that in this case, the loss had taken place, so that's why they had the right. In this case, I'm sure that they're going to try to take it up to the Supreme Court. But at this point, the appellate division reversed the trial judge. Trial judge found for the insurance company, and the appellate division said, no, not so fast. Now, apparently, the challengers to the Camden Police reorganization must start over. So what does that mean? Well, the New Jersey Supreme Court has ruled that a 2012 proposed ordinance that sought to block the city of Camden from replacing its municipal police force with a countywide police force was lawful, but is now too outdated to be placed on the ballot. So that means it's a start over. And as I said, we were talking about judges. Governor Christie on August 10th also nominated two attorneys to sit on the Superior Court bench in Ocean County. So this would, of course, be in addition to the attorneys who were approved by the Senate. So these attorneys will go through the process, and we'll see what happens with whether or not their nominations are confirmed. Now, the governor has signed some fairly significant legislation that will change the way that juveniles are charged with criminal offenses and the way they can be tried and sentenced and confined as adults. This is fairly far-reaching. I think what I'll do in the fall is have a criminal attorney come on the program to talk more about that. Now, Governor Christie is always in the news, not only the national news, but the local news. And a Superior Court judge in New Jersey has dismissed an open record suit seeking details of Governor Chris Christie's spending on out-of-state travel. And the reason the judge gave was that releasing the records would pose too great a risk to the governor's safety. So I guess, and you probably hear this on the sports news, but I guess it means that he can, travel down to Dallas and sit up in the box. And, I don't think he's going to allow anyone to photograph him anymore. That's what happened last year. But these are trips that they're different groups and different individuals were trying to get the records to see how much was spent, even if the governor, and we know that he flew on Mr. Johnson's separate plane in one of those trips. And we also know, for example, as a Packers fan, I know he was out in Wisconsin, and somehow they were not able to get any photographs of him, which I thought was interesting. So what else is happening in as far as the cases? There is another case from the Supreme Court that the Faulkner Act, initiated proposed ordinance, does not constitute an unlawful restraint on the future exercise of the City of Camden's legislative power and is not preempted by the Municipal Rehabilitation and Economic Recovery Act. Not sure that anybody except a real policy wonk is really interested in this case, but if you are, that case went up to the Supreme Court, and as I said, that was a challenge to the police reorganization. However, since the ordinance as drafted is now out of date because it took so long to get to the Supreme Court, and it's also inaccurate and misleading, they got to go back to the drawing board. The appellate division, this was an opinion by Judge Accurso, who is one of the really shining stars. Every bench, she was sitting on the trial court, and she's now in the appellate division. But there was the question, this is a Title IX trial, and the issue was whether a licensed psychologist retained by the Division of Child Protection and Permanency, this is our former DIFAS, and they retained the psychologist to evaluate a five-year-old. And the issue was whether or not he could offer his opinion on the nature of her reported symptoms and his diagnosis to corroborate the child's hearsay report that her father made her touch his genitals. These are tough, tough cases, obviously. So that the trial judge in this case heard the testimony pursuant to the New Jersey Rule of Evidence. This is 104. And so the trial judge did hear the evidence, but he determined to exclude it on the base. He excluded this evidence. I'm not sure which judge it was. It could have been he or she, the judge, excluded the evidence based on a line of criminal cases, starting with State versus JQ, in which the Supreme Court rejected the use of child sexual abuse accommodation syndrome as evidence. As so in that case, there were a line of cases where the Supreme Court rejected the use of child sexual abuse accommodation syndrome evidence as substantive proof of child abuse. Now, the state, the expert offered in this case, however, did not offer an opinion on child sexual abuse accommodation syndrome. He testified instead that the child, whom he evaluated within a month of the alleged abuse, and the psychologist said that the child suffered from adjustment disorder with mixed disturbance of emotions and conduct, and he concluded that her statements and presentation were consistent with a child who has experienced sexual abuse. Now, what the appellate court did is they reversed and remanded for the judge to consider the testimony offered by the division's expert. In other words, the trial judge heard the testimony but did not consider it. And the appellate division held that the psychological opinion evidence offered in this case was admissible to corroborate the child's alleged and allegations of abuse. And of course, it would be subject to whatever weight the judge deems appropriate to accord the testimony. So in this case, the appellate division said the judge who heard the testimony should have considered it. And when we talk about weight, very often what happens in non-jury trials, judges will hear testimony, even if it's questionable, and then they will say, well, they'll determine how much weight to give the testimony. So that's what the court is saying here, is just figure out how much weight you want to give it. So let me see if we can play some news. I don't think so. So we'll play a few spots from our sponsors, and I'll be back to talk some more. So let me see, however, if we can take that news break. Guess not.
Did you know that 48% of executives see the golf course as an ideal biz environment? 93% said playing golf with a business associate is a good way to establish a closer relationship. This September, bring your business to the green and join us for our 2015 Golf Classic. This year's event will take place on Monday, September 21st at Copper Hill Country Club with a 9 a.m. shotgun start. Don't miss this annual event, which includes exciting contests, a networking luncheon, an award ceremony that will present the winning foursome with the 100 and Cup. For more details, please visit www.100andchamber.org or call the Chamber at 908-782-7115.
At Crown Trophy of Flemington, we have thousands of products for you to choose from. Whether you're looking for trophies, plaques, or corporate awards, Crown Trophy of Flemington is your one-stop shop. We feature acrylic and crystal awards and promotional products for any occasion. We build and engrave all awards right on site. And we're a leading supplier of varsity jackets for local sports teams. We provide quality customer service and great pricing. Crown Trophy of Flemington is conveniently located in the Staples Shopping Center in Flemington. Crown Trophy of Flemington, we're trophies and a whole lot more.
What can you do as a member of Rotary? You can eradicate polio. You can promote peace. You can feed the hungry. You can help children do better in school. Because Rotary believes that by working together, you can do anything. This is District Governor Megan Jones Holt. Learn more about Rotary and join me every Monday at 11 a.m. on the Rotary Hour, the show that is dedicated to answering the ultimate question of what Rotary is. Find us on the web at rotarynj.org. Rotary, humanity in motion.
Well, I'm back. I'm Pat Smits. I'm an attorney here in Hunterdon County. I'm just bringing you up to date on some of the legal news and cases, decisions that have been recently decided by our courts. And people that know me know that I do only family law, but I'm not talking about family law cases. At least none of them so far have been that significant. However, there are a number of things that really are either interesting or at least important. And one of the things that everyone should be aware of, especially here in Hunterdon County, is that recent environmental rulings by the New Jersey appellate courts have made it clear that owners of contaminated property can be held liable under the New Jersey Spill Compensation and Control Act. And they can be held liable even if they neither caused nor contributed to the contamination during their period of ownership. And what this means, of course, is that you should be very careful if you're buying property in Hunterdon County to make sure that you're really well aware of the title. There are real estate attorneys, and we have, in fact, right down the street, Cortez and Hay, and I'm sure there are other title companies, but they will do a great job and let you know if you're purchasing property, just what is the history of that property. Now, that doesn't mean that anyone can know if there was illegal dumping, and that is, in fact, a real problem. Because that, is a real problem. And there are lots of people that did a lot of dumping and improperly, and nobody knew about it. So that's a significant thing for anybody who's purchasing property, especially any kind of property that was used in the past for a gasoline station or anything where you might expect that there could be some contamination. But even people buying residential real estate, depending on where it is, may have to be concerned. There was another, now this goes back to July, but a fairly significant case, decided by the Supreme Court, Allstate New Jersey Insurance Company versus LaJara. And this was a case that the justice has held that the right to a civil trial provided by Article 1, Paragraph 9 of the New Jersey Constitution applies to private action claims seeking compensatory and punitive damages under the Fraud Prevention Act. So this is a case where the insurance company was suing, and the insurance company, the plaintiff in this case, has a right to civil trial by jury. And that is because there's a constitution and a constitutional right for the jury trial in such cases. And the court said it applies to private action claims seeking compensatory and punitive damages. That could be significant in many cases. And so, again, one of the concerns that people often have is, you know, should they seek out an attorney? And frankly, I think that, you know, it doesn't hurt. I mean, I think people, and it can be extremely helpful. And I think people are often afraid. They don't want to hear bad news, so they think there won't be bad news if they don't hear it from an attorney. But I think that it is very critical to really understand if you're making large purchases or any other reason. Find out from an attorney. Most of us don't mind a phone call. I certainly handle a lot of phone calls from people asking me questions, and they have to be limited to family law. But I'm more than happy to spend a few minutes with someone on the telephone, and very often they don't even need to see me. The New Jersey Supreme Court has also laid to rest the notion that the state law protecting whistleblowers doesn't apply to an employee whose essential function is to act as one. So that may be a little confusing, but there's, again, the courts are, laid to rest that notion. Now, the New Jersey President, Stephen Sweeney, has confirmed that there won't be a ballot referendum this November to bring casino gambling to North Jersey. So that has been an issue as to whether or not it would be on the ballot. And as you know, New Jersey voters had to vote for gambling when it started in Atlantic City. Not going to be on the ballot. And a federal appeals panel upheld the dismissal of a suit claiming that a former employee of a law firm, who was apparently a casualty of layoffs, was actually let go because of his advanced age. So this was an age discrimination suit that didn't go anywhere. So you can't, just because you're fired because you're older, you don't necessarily have a right to employment, and you don't necessarily have a right to, you have a right to claim you were fired because of age, and the employer has to be very careful to show that that's not the case. And so I have said before on this program, employers out there, you really have to be very careful when you're firing anyone, but especially if you're firing someone who's older and an older employee, because the last thing anyone wants, and certainly not a small employer, is to get involved in litigation. So that there's a Site Remediation Reform Act, the SRRA, and in 2009 it created a sea change in how the remediation of contaminated sites is addressed in New Jersey. And the core component was a recognition of a new professional, and they are called the Licensed Site Remediation Professional. And they're vested with the responsibility and authority to supervise the remediation of most sites and to document the completion of remediation through the issuance of a response action outcome. So that, this is very costly, and to have any kind of remediation, which is why I was saying you have to be very careful to make sure that you're not buying property that could have contamination, especially in light of the fact that you could be held responsible. So as that was another recent case. Let's see. There's a lot of fee arbitrations going on. The federal judge granted a motion by Bridgegate defendants to subpoena interview notes into the investigation, into the lane closures. This is getting to be really old news. And that particular was pretty much old news. Now, there's some shifting around in the Attorney General's office. That's to be expected. There are some litigation guidelines for affordable housing. Middlesex County Judge has issued guidelines that municipalities, developers, and affordable housing advocates must follow when determining whether local governments are living up to their responsibilities to provide their constitutionally mandated share of low and moderate income housing. So this has been a problem in New Jersey for many, many years. And so this judge in Middlesex County has now issued the guidelines, and hopefully that could be make things somewhat easier. And it is a real problem in many, many municipalities. Well, and I won't make personal comments on that because I don't know if anybody would agree with them. But in any event, there also was a recent, it was last month, but a Supreme Court decision that three municipalities, and this was in the case itself is Borough of Keyport versus Local 68. And the three municipalities that were involved in the case acted for reasons of economy based on municipal fiscal distress existing at the time, rendering the management choice to use a temporary or permanent layoff solution, one that contributed to a managerial prerogative not subject to negotiation. So that the court found that the layoff actions at issue in that consolidated appeal constituted non-negotiable subjects under prong three of the test for negotiability. Sounds a little bit Greek to me, but in any event, that was, again, a case that was heard by the Supreme Court. And the decision was issued by Judge LaVecchia. So, as I said, all of the Supreme Court cases are, in fact, published. And not all of the appellate division cases, not all of the, and certainly very few trial court cases are published, meaning the opinions are published, the written opinions. So often a judge will provide a written opinion, but it will not be published. Attorneys may pass it around. It's not and cannot be used as precedent in a case. There was a case, a civil rights case, Murillo versus the Monmouth County Sheriff's Officers. And again, this was Judge LaVecchia on the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court ruled that the civil rights causes of action against the officers should have been dismissed based on the affirmative defense of qualified immunity. So in other words, these officers had qualified immunity, and therefore as a result of that, the civil rights causes of action should have been dismissed. And there have been most of the Supreme Court cases on parenting and matrimonial cases are not approved for publication. So, for example, there was a family law case, where the defendant appealed an order setting forth a parenting schedule, and the defendant contended that the order did not afford him the full measure of his parental rights and denied him liberal and reasonable parenting time, holidays, and vacation. Now, most of the time, the appellate division is going to try to find a way to affirm the trial court. And in this case, the appellate division affirmed, finding that the trial judge in this case prepared a very detailed order regarding custody and parenting time, that the judge, the goal was to blend the parties' proposals to create an order that they could live with, but that would require them to work together, and that was a worthy object for the, worthy objective for a family court judge who's managing the litigation in what both parties and even the defendant father acknowledged was an acrimonious relationship. And those were the very sort of circumstances that called for deference of the family court's special expertise. So what the appellate division will do is they try not to second guess the trial court, and certainly not decisions of credibility of witnesses. They recognize that the judges at the trial level have a better sense, especially at the family level, although they don't all, but that's what the appellate division will try not to substitute their decision making. In other words, if the judge made findings of fact and conclusions of law and they were reasonable, the appellate division generally tries to bend over backwards to uphold it. So at the same time, there was another case with respect to child support, and that was Ackerman versus Freetag, and again, appellate division. And in that case, the plaintiff appealed from an order that denied her, and it was an unopposed motion for reconsideration of her request for an award of alimony based on changed circumstances. She also wanted an increase in child support and reimbursement of child-related expenses. And apparently in this case, when the parties, who were both physicians, divorced in 1999, they entered into a separation and property settlement agreement that included a waiver of all rights of alimony, which either might have against the other. And they said they waived it both at that time, 1999, and in the future. So what happened in 2012 is the New Jersey Board of Medical Examiners suspended the plaintiff's license to practice medicine. And then she filed a series of motions seeking relief based on this event and the impact on her financial circumstances. The trial judge denied her motion for the commencement of alimony and an increase in child support. The judge stated that he had required her to submit evidence as to why her license had been suspended, also required her to provide a sworn doctor's report addressing her ability to work, and properly completed and current case information statement. A case information statement is a statement that litigants have to provide to the court. It's a sworn statement. It includes income information. It includes a budget. Includes a listing of all assets so that the trial court has a very good idea of the circumstances, the party's circumstances. In any event, she had apparently not properly completed it. And the court also required her to provide a written explanation addressing whether her medical condition caused her license to be suspended. And apparently the plaintiff failed to comply, and so the appellate court affirmed, agreeing with Judge Kessler's conclusion that in light of her failure to comply with the board's requirements, she was voluntarily unemployed. So in other words, because she did not do what the board said, the trial judge considered her voluntarily unemployed, and the appellate division upheld it. There's again an unpublished case from the New Jersey Division of Child Protection and Permanency. I still have a hard time saying that rather than DIFAS. But in any event, in that case, the defendant is the mother of two minor children, and there were consolidated cases. And she appealed from a series of orders stemming from a Title 30 proceeding. These proceedings, Title 9, Title 30, are very specific. They give the state specific rights to, some of them is terminate parental rights, monitor, require certain things to be done. But in this case, there were a series of orders stemming from a Title 30 proceeding, and the defendant in that case stipulated that she required services to address her substance abuse and domestic violence issues. So in other words, the person can voluntarily indicate that they need services from the division, and the division will then provide the services. So in what happened is the an order dismissed the litigation in the Title 30 proceeding and granted legal and physical custody of the children's biological father. And at that point, the mother requested and the judge refused to hold a dispositional hearing or perform a best interest analysis before transferring custody. So the appellate division said, by granting the children's father legal and physical custody under the, it's a certain docket, an FN docket, that meant the trial court inextricably intertwined the Title 30 action with independent custody issues. So in that case, the appellate division reversed because it shouldn't have been handled that way. So we'll be back after just a couple more spots from our sponsors, and so I hope you will continue listening.
When it matters most, our award-winning team of emergency physicians and nurses provides sophisticated care 24 hours a day. Superior emergency care at a moment's notice. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care.
Hi, I'm Sharon Skibbe of CompuPay Payroll. The Chamber is a great way to connect to other businesses within Hunterdon County and build strong and lasting business relationships.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Hi, back again. Pat Spitz, your host for It's the Law, and just explaining and talking about some cases and other legal news. Sometimes you can't win. So let me tell you about a can't win case. This was an appellate division case. It was not published, but it was an unpublished case. And what happened in that case is while en route to defendant Overlook Hospital by ambulance, after her father found her unresponsive, the plaintiff's daughter, and he's the one who was suing, the plaintiff's daughter told the paramedics that her father choked her and that she was afraid of him. Now, at the hospital, a police officer told the plaintiff that he no longer had custody of his daughter. And he escorted the plaintiff, this is the father, to a separate room in the emergency room because he was having chest pains, and he told the plaintiff if he left the room, he would be arrested. Now, the emergency record showed that the daughter was seen by a social worker at 1:45 in the morning, was seen by a crisis counselor at 3:10 in the morning, and by the Division of Youth and Family Services. Well, this goes back now, it's Child Protection, at 3:40 a.m. So everybody came out, saw her in the hospital, and at that point she admitted to snorting cocaine before she lost consciousness. She was also interviewed by DIFAS workers. The plaintiff father was also interviewed by DIFAS workers. And after he was discharged, the plaintiff received a call from Overlook at approximately 9 a.m. advising that Dyfus had cleared him of any wrongdoing and that he was free to come back and pick up his daughter. So that what happened is the trial court dismissed his complaint against Overlook, and he appealed from the order that dismissed his complaint against Overlook based on his failure to supply an affidavit of merit. So that's why the trial court apparently initially dismissed. So the appellate court affirmed, and they rejected the plaintiff's argument that the statute did not apply because he asserted a claim for intentional or negligent infliction of emotional distress rather than a claim for professional negligence. So what the court said is that despite the name given to the cause of action, the claim rested on allegations of a duty to exercise reasonable medical skill and judgment and a breach of that duty. Therefore, the appellate court found that the cause of action in this case satisfied all three factors, and therefore the expert was required to support the plaintiff's cause of action. So as a result of him not having an expert to provide an affidavit of merit, and there's certain things that they're very minimal, they're very easy to get, but that is the situation. You have to have an affidavit of merit in those circumstances. So the what else is happening? There's a case in malpractice, legal malpractice, which of course attorneys never like to hear. But in this case, the plaintiff appealed from an order granting summary judgment in favor of the defendants. And in this case, the defendants were attorneys. And so then by summary judgment, I mean that the attorney defendants filed a motion saying that the court should make a decision based on all the evidence because there was nothing conflicting and there was no reason to hold them into the case. So, in other words, the trial judge did grant summary judgment, and thereafter, the plaintiff filed two Chapter 13 bankruptcy petitions, and on behalf of his clients, and the clients brought a legal malpractice claim against the attorney, claiming that he had filed legally deficient bankruptcy pleadings on their behalf, and as a result, they lost their residence and their bank and business property. So that the question is whether or not the attorney had professional legal malpractice. He did have professional legal malpractice insurance, and then after that, he was declared insolvent, and so that meaning the insurance company was insolvent. And if that happens, and in this case it did, the New Jersey Property Liability Insurance Guarantee Association assumes responsibility for administering the policy. I mean, frankly, this case and many others, you should just be sure that you have insurance, sufficient insurance, and insurance that will move with you if, in fact, you move out of state. But that actually, that case went back and forth from the appellate division, and the trial judge determined that the plaintiff failed to prove, the plaintiff failed to prove that the defendant breached the duty of care owed to him. So for that reason, for that reason.